Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
All right, that's enough. Some of you guys, I tell you, you ain't happy unless you're bitching. I think some people waited 15 games, or they were like, hey, that's a great streak. And they either A, were in the back of their mind waiting to hate, or B, they just did not watch the games. They heard us and everybody saying how big of a game this was. They went, you know what? Fine, I'm going to make some time for this. It's a 7 o'clock tip. I'll get to bed before 10. Fine, I'll go ahead and watch the game. And because they were playing the Celtics, the defending champion, the team that dispatched us in the playoffs, you watched, you saw Darius Garland, you didn't focus on anything else, you saw Darius Garland, and you decided that it was more of the same, and now you're disgusted in the 15-1 Cavs. That's the way I kind of feel about some of the folks today.
People are disgusted?
That's the way some are acting.
Why?
That's the way that some are acting.
Wait a second. I think
now, I may be worked into a shoot by just some by the vocal minority. Maybe that's a possibility. I hope it is, actually.
I mean, in a lot of ways, it wasn't all that different from the playoff series against Boston last year, where you kind of felt like when Boston wanted to, they were going to be able to do the things they needed to do. But with that said, for the Cavs to hang around in that game yesterday when Boston was doing that from three-point range, finishing with 22 threes, 53.7%, I feel like the Cavs, without some of their big defensive role players, I feel like they acquitted themselves pretty well.
I did too.
And again, here's the big picture. Nobody's going to pick the Cavs to beat the Celtics in a series, especially when Porzingis comes back. Even if Porzingis doesn't come back, which he is, by Christmas, I think now is the date, nobody's going to pick the Cavs to beat the Celtics. You're not supposed to beat the Celtics. They're the defending champs. And the ace you have up your sleeve, Evan Mobley, hasn't even begun to take flight like he is going to, which could be 2 years from now, 3 years from now, maybe next year. Maybe by these playoffs, he'll start to even look that. He's going to be so good.
I know.
But this version of the Cavs is not supposed to be at the level of the defending champs, right? I mean, there was a reason that you were 15-0 and you were, by tip-off, 5.5-point dogs.
Well, you lost players before they... I mean, all those guys that we were saying questionable ended up being out. So it was... I mean, you wrote scheduled loss. I don't know if that was kind of tongue-in-cheek or whatever. I was a little bit upset by some of the reaction I got about the game. That's all. I was just upset by some of the folks there. I was like, well, I thought they played tough. And, well, Ken, that's a loser's mentality. Oh, I mean, all right, that's fine. We can talk tough all we want.
It was a physical game. It's really hard to be physical with a team that can space the floor like that and shoot from so far out. You just don't, you know, and they were allowing that. I thought the officials kind of called it like a playoff game.
Yeah,
for a while. I think they were allowing a lot of physicality. You saw players griping the entire, my God, Jaylen Brown, every shot he took, he was looking at the refs. Darius, every shot he took was looking at the refs. Donovan was looking at the refs. But they officiated like a playoff game. And so I loved it. Just from a fan perspective, I loved seeing a real test. Because as much fun as that Chicago Bulls game was, where it was, you know, just sprint down, shoot a three, sprint down, shoot a three, sprint down, shoot a three, dunk, dunk, sprint down, shoot a three. This was a real challenge. And you don't get a lot of these in November in the NBA. So I don't know if it's the streak, the cup. I mean, we debated that, but I thought
it's not the cup.
I think you've seen around the NBA, yeah, guys are talking about the cup a lot and how much more the games kind of mean.
No, I still don't think.
I think the fans
those
don't,
games,
I think the players are treating it a little differently.
If they want to treat those other games, fine. I think that this was a 15-0 team taking on a defending champ in the East that got rid of them in the postseason last year, which I think the streak didn't matter. Well, Derek White was asked a question. This is with the question on. All right, here's the question and the answer from Derek White about the streak. This is Derek White of the Boston Celtics. Hit it.
Is there any, like, did you guys talk about the fact that they were undefeated? Like, was there any extra motivation between you guys as a team, like, wanting to be that first loss for them?
Yeah, we knew. I think everybody knew that they were undefeated, and I mean, coming to our building, and I mean, also it's an NBA Cup game. We already lost one game, so it was a really big game in that aspect. So, you know, we were all aware.
You mentioned the NBA Cup. I say it stands somewhat corrected.
Well, I think for the fans, it's only year two of this, and for the fan, we're not getting paid extra money to watch these games.
No,
I do think the cup matters a little bit. I don't think it's like the playoffs or anything like that, but I do think you're seeing teams play to completion in almost all these games. I think there was one blowout last night. Oh. Every other game went pretty much in the last 3 minutes.
That's fair. I mean, I did say, like, yeah, does Donovan Mitchell need the money? No. Does Ty Jerome need the money? Yeah. $500,000 to win the entire thing would be nice. And there's players on. I know Boston is a team of well paid professionals, but I bet there's guys who are contributors on that team that probably would like an extra $500,000. I mean, everybody likes extra money, but I mean, there's some people that's a quarter of their salary, for crying out loud. So, okay, I could see that, because you always want to be a good teammate. So I said that a couple days ago, and I can agree with you there. I thought, though, that, again, going back to the game, there were a couple of times watching it, I thought, like, this is where maybe the wheels come off and we just go quietly into the night. I didn't think that went that way whatsoever. And to paddle back, I mean, they were down by three. They had a chance. They had a couple open looks. They couldn't knock it down. Then they missed the bunny. I think that hurt. I told you that before the show. Just a couple of times where they were right back in it. They just couldn't. Because it's when you're down by as many as, 10 at one point, it makes it difficult. I mean, I know in the first half they were down by more than 10 a couple of times, but it makes it difficult to go all the way back and then get past. You know, you can get back in, but then to get over that hump, it's a tough thing against a good team. But again, 120 to 117, I didn't think that they... I'm sorry, but if anybody thinks that they, you know what, had down their leg, I just totally disagree. I do not think that was bright lights or anything like that. I mean, Darius... Yeah, he had a rough day at the office, and we'll talk about that throughout the day. But I didn't think all of a sudden you needed to trade Darius Garland or anything because of that, over that performance yesterday. No.
Well, they have the one. They're the one team. It's amazing in this apron era where all these teams are starting to talk about their limitations in team building, how they can put together complete rosters. Yes. Boston has almost a perfect team. They have a perfect team because
as much as you could have, yeah.
How could you do better than that? How in the world do you get Holiday and Derek White, who are the best perimeter defenders? They're two of the top five perimeter defenders in the league. They're on the same team. And you have a team that right now at this stage, until Evan Mobley really takes off, you are guard oriented. And those guys can make Darius Garland works so much harder than the 98% of these teams in the NBA that don't even try to stop you at the point of attack in a regular season game. Yeah, playoffs get tougher, and I've had my concerns about Darius in the playoffs and physicality and how he's going to create. And then he came out this year and played like a bat out of hell. He played like an all-NBA guy. I mean, his shooting has been incredible. There was a piece that came out on Yahoo yesterday, which was using quotes from a year ago, because they had an article written about Darius Garland last year, and then he got injured. So they never released the article. So they used some of the quotes from last year. It's kind of an interesting piece. But it goes into all the percentages of Darius, and they are elite percentages across the board. The floater, the catch and shoot, the off the dribble threes, like the assists, everything he's doing is all at literally an all NBA level. And then last night it looked like playoff Darius Garland that really, really struggles against size. And, you know, he was doubting himself. He started to, instead of, you know, hoisting immediately. Now he still got shots up. So I'll give him that. I know people were really upset that he took 21 shots.
Well, that one in the corner when they were, I think was to put him up by one, and he was like willing. He's trying to will it in. I go, man, that's not.
He was in his
that's
head.
Not confident.
But in a
that's
way, you could tell that Atkinson and Donovan Mitchell were telling him during every timeout, keep shooting, keep shooting, because they have faith in him.
It's the only way to get through it.
They could not believe that he was that bad. Yep. And for whatever reason, he cannot get by Al Horford.
Well, they know.
Not happening. He can't do it. Maybe he's got to know the scouting report by this time, because Al Horford was inviting They love that switch. They love that switch because they don't think Darius can get by him because he's got long arms. He's going to block it every single time. There was a play in the first quarter where I think he blocked Darius with both hands, which you never see. Like, he altered him with one hand and then came across to the others. He's just got too much size
for him.
Well,
this is where your pragmatism was, and I couldn't fully disagree with you yesterday, but I was so hyped and excited. It was a truth I didn't want to hear. Like, this is... It's a big game. It's also a game that's in November that you're going to have to work on a few things. And to tell Darius Garland to keep Darius shooting, that's one of the things that you're working on. Because you know you're not going to be able to do anything in May unless you start to work these things out now and work them out throughout the regular season. So, like, you remember Evan Mobley last year. It's like, all right, this is a lead up, the ramp up and everything. And I know it didn't necessarily go until we got to the Boston series where Jarrett was out. And then he started to show up, and then it kind of made the light go off for a lot of fans, like maybe they shouldn't be sharing the floor as much. That changed a few people's perspectives. But for Darius, there's no doubt that Darius has battled confidence issues. And throughout his career, from the very beginning, when he first started, it's like, hey, get in the corner, don't gather, just shoot, got to keep shooting. I don't care what the final score is, just shoot. And I think that he's been able to do that, and this is where some of the criticism here. In the grand scheme of things, yeah, like, he is a better shooter against teams that aren't the Boston Celtics because the stage isn't as big. I think that's the next step. However, again, I think you watch the first 15 games of the season. I don't know how – I'm disappointed that Darius was so bad yesterday, but I don't think it's all of a sudden a reason to go back to the old – who do we trade him to? What can we get? Conversations,
yeah, far too early
that we had in the second half. I think it's just unbelievable. So that was some of the things that I was a little bit fit to be tied on this morning when I walked in the room. Was I'm looking at my mentions, going, what are we doing here? And then I said it this morning. I put it out there. I go, guys, you can't tell me you watched the first 15 games and have that to say about Darius Garland. And the reaction to that was something I didn't like. So it was a.
They kind of made
it was
up,
a little bit upsetting to
they,
say the least.
They kind of made up for Darius because of Ty Jerome and Craig Porter Jr. I mean, Craig Porter Jr., I could tell Boston is so dead focused on their scouting reports because they didn't guard Craig Porter Jr. at the 3-point line.
No, they did not.
He's not a 3-point shooter. You know, one thing, when I watched Craig Porter Jr. last year, I'm like, this guy has all the little tricks. He's got all those spin moves, the hesitation. He has these old man basketball tricks that make him really, really fun to watch. He just doesn't shoot. He can't shoot a three. And then yesterday he hits three of them. And those were all big threes, every single one of them. So between him and Ty Jerome, I think combined they were 10 of 13. So they made up for a lot. God, if those guys did not, you know, if they were not efficient, they'd have been really screwed. I think the only other thing that I noticed last night that was a little clunky was because they want to play through Mobley as much as they do, which was awesome in many ways yesterday. In fact, there were times when I kept thinking, man, keep putting pressure on him. Keep putting the ball in Mobley's hands. Jared Allen kind of disappears, and they don't really have a role for Jared Allen when they're running that much offense through Evan Mobley. It's
should
really,
they take them both off the floor?
Really well, they've done a good job this year of staggering
all the
them,
time. Yeah,
and it's just not like Jared Allen. Barkley, I wasn't totally with him at halftime when he's like, man, they need to be running a lot more through Jared Allen. I'm like, I don't think
I disagree too.
I don't think that helps their spacing. I don't really believe that. But Jared's been having such a great season this year that it's tough when he's a wallflower like yesterday.
Let me ask you this. Did we see it? Did we miss Dean Wade last night stretching the floor out?
Well, I think
because I think he creates.
No, it's defensively is where I think they really, really, really missed him.
See, I think he creates space for Darius. I think Darius is a little bit better when you have a wing out there to create some space. I thought that was part of the reason he was getting hammered a little bit.
I just think that having Wade out there defensively, he forces Boston to have to think about some of the Cavs switches, where do they want to have the ball, makes them kind of have to give it up one more pass, which can break up their rhythm. Plus, he can get his arms in the way because 6'9", and they just don't have that without him. They didn't have Okoro either. And they could still shoot over Okoro, but Okoro is going to make him work a little harder. But overall, I mean, Cavs had no business hanging in that game yesterday. So if your first thought is, all right, Darius sucked, yeah, that was a big part of why they lost. But if your second thought is, we don't belong on the same floor as Boston, I disagree. Boston would have beaten a lot of teams by 30 last night. That game would have been over for 95% of the NBA.
Now the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
All right, the Big Ten dominating the college football playoff home games. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But first, we start out with your Cavaliers and their rally falling short yesterday despite the barrage of sharpshooting from the Celtics. They lose 120 to 117. The storyline, obviously, the three-point shooting difference. Cavs made 10, and in a different era, that would be all-time great. Mm-hmm. But they end up getting outscored by 36 from three-point range as the Celtics went 22 of 41. Third straight game, the Celtics have made 20 or more threes. Yesterday, I saw, obviously, a lot of people on social media, well, if Boston doesn't shoot that well, I got news for you. This is kind of what they do. Like, have you ever watched a team? Like, Golden State, when they first arrived on the scene, you kind of thought, with the exception of Draymond and maybe Iguodala, every three was going to go in, right?
Yes.
I felt like every three was going in yesterday with Boston. Like, I thought every single one was going to go. That was where I was mentally. And I just think it's going to be that way when you play them. You just have to hope they have a bad night.
I think that's a fair observation.
You don't think I'm building them up too much?
No. I mean, they shoot 60 a night, for crying out loud. So, yeah, if they have a good night shooting threes, that's it.
Yeah. 51 is the official number. They were 10 below that yesterday. Do you think that they'd let the foot off the gas?
No.
During portions of that game?
I really don't.
They kind of start messing around.
I think there's ebbs and flows with every game, though, but I don't think that they took their... The Cavs are playing for something. I mean, you can't... I'm going to start a fight with you. You can't tell me that it's a meaningful NBA Cup game, and then, well, they took their foot off the gas and let the Cavs back in it. The Cavs are going to play their off the entire game.
I kind of thought Boston did that in that playoff series last year, too. I thought they would get leads and kind of feel like, all right, we can hunker down.
I felt that way during the postseason last year, which was frustrating. I did not feel that way last night. I really didn't. I felt that they try a few things? I'm sure, but I'm sure the Cavs had to try a few things because of their lineup problems that they had, where you had three guys out. But I felt that, like, it's a November game. Did they go full balls to the wall? No, probably not, but I don't even know if the Cavs really did. Mm-hmm. So, I thought it was a well-played game between two good teams. Like somebody said, well, Ken, you said yesterday it's a measuring stick. Twitter reactions brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Yeah, it was a measuring stick, and you measured up against the best team in the NBA, the defending champions. And you didn't beat them, but you played with them. That's a measuring stick.
Well,
it's not a win or just stop talking about the Cavs.
I saw people alluding to how are they not adjusting to this? And I kind of got bad news
for you. It's hard to make those adjustments if you don't have those players.
I don't think there's adjusting. I think Boston's going to get good looks. I think the way they play and the talent, like I said, they have as close to a perfect roster as I think you can assemble.
It's a great start to the season.
They've got all these two-way players.
But none of this is fixed in thoughts of, like, I don't know if there's a trade that you can make. What I'm frustrated with, I don't think and I don't believe there's a trade that you can make that is going to all of a sudden be the Celtics beater. So it's going to be an uphill battle no matter what you do. I just don't want you to roll over and die the way I think you've done in the past. And I think that there's ways to make this thing work. With Dean Wade, I think it helps make it work if he were on the floor. I think it went to with Ty Jerome, who's healthy, that's always an if. I think you can make that work. We'll see what happens when Max Strus comes back from injury.
Owen? You're my basketball Sherpa, right? You know more about this than I do. If Wade's out there, if Okoro's out there, if Caris LeVert's out there, does it change the outcome last night?
Maybe they don't. Like, the way Caris has been playing.
Yeah.
But he's always been feast or famine, but this year he hasn't. He's been really good, so.
I didn't realize until I'm looking at the box score now. They played eight guys last night, and one of them was Craig Porter Jr., who hasn't played a ton this year, right?
He's outstanding.
He played 25 minutes and was great, hit those three threes, and then Niang played 30 minutes last night.
Right. They absolutely could have used those guys. I just don't, like, I've watched them with Okoro, like, Boston could just shoot over them. Tatum and Brown can get to their spots, even against Okoro, and he's really the Cavs' best perimeter defender. So I do think, you know, in a perfect world, you know, you want all your bodies. The problem is they get Porzingis.
So we need one guy to shoot better. And that one guy's Darius Garland.
Yeah, you need a Darius to shoot a lot better. So, first of all, here's Kenny Atkinson on what he learned about his team last night.
The first thing we learned was the force and physicality. They had playoff force and physicality. We had regular season force and physicality. And that's why we're down whatever we were down at half. Second half, we turned it up, but it's kind of too late. We're just going to have to put it in the bank and try to make adjustments.
He did. I think a lot of teams just totally get blown out the way that Boston shot the ball last night. Meanwhile, Darius Garland, that was obviously the big weakness. He was 3 of 21, and that length, that size really seemed to bother him. Then he was in his own head, I think, throughout portions of that game. They targeted him too, man. Boston, that's how you knew they kind of did treat it like a playoff game. You haven't seen teams really go at Garland like you will in the playoffs, and they did. They were like, we are starting every possession. We are hunting whoever Darius Garland is defending, because they have that is an advantage they have right now. And that's even without Porzingis.
Yeah, this is going to be the fight that we have. Like, when you get to the postseason, they will continue to attack him. He is not going to be – it's not like all of a sudden he's not going to be the focal point. I'd be very surprised. They will continue to attack him.
He battled. I mean, he had a nice block of Derek White. He really did. He battled as well as I think he possibly can. But unfortunately, those offensive numbers were just such a struggle. So here's first the coach and then Darius on what happened yesterday.
This is an excuse. The density of our schedule has been enormous. And he's rolled it out every night, and he's played unbelievable. I think he hit a wall. He won't say that. I'll say it. It's part of the NBA. It's too bad it happened. But like I said, he's been going at it really hard for us, to, you know, over this first stretch of the schedule.
Me just missing shots. I thought I had some pretty good ones. I think most of them are pretty good, to be honest with you. And shots that I make regularly. And just didn't fall for some reason.
From what you heard from Atkinson, excuse or justification? Because I actually will go with justification.
I'm going to go with justification.
I know that we...
I don't know. There's a lot of, like, a coach told me the truth for the first time.
Well, when JB was here, after a while, it just became, all right, these are all excuses. Everything's an excuse. Every single timeout, you seem like you're blaming everybody else, except maybe, you know, sometimes you just have bad games, too. They have played so much more basketball in a confined amount of time that I do think caught up to them also last night when you didn't have those other guys. That could be, oh, and you asked about those guys. That's where they definitely could have used those guys. Kenny, we have another Cleveland Coach of the Year / Manager of the Year.
Yes, we sure
they
as hell
did it
do.
Again, how about Stephen Vogt receiving 27 of the 30 first place votes? He joins Tito in 2022, Tito in 2016, Tito in 2013, Eric Wedge in 2007. Mike Hargrove... didn't win it. Mike Hargrove never won Manager of the Year.
Crazy. How the hell are you the manager of the Cleveland Indians in the mid-90s, the early to mid-90s, and you're not Manager of the Year?
Too talented.
How is that possible?
They were too talented.
Did they not... It's just the American League Manager of the Year, right? There's a National League Manager of the Year as well. Correct. I want to make sure before I go shooting my mouth off. Did they not award Manager of the Year in 1994 because of the strike?
I doubt it. I mean,
he was robbed by the strike.
They were locked out.
Then he was robbed by the strike, by the lockout.
They tried to vote. They went to the voting place. The doors were locked.
It looks like they gave an award.
They
in 94.
Did.
Buck Showalter. The Yankees.
Oh my God!
I take back everything I said.
I bet you're really happy over there, aren't you?
Oh, he was loving that.
I wasn't even alive yet.
He was loving it
in the womb.
All
was your mom pregnant with you yet?
We're back to AI Mitch.
Not until 96.
We're back to AI.
96, huh?
We're not letting him go anymore.
Good morning, guys.
Would like to be in the room for that one. That'd have been fun.
More Yankee talk. All right, here is Vogt on what he learned in his first year.
The time management, learning how to navigate that on the fly while also going out trying to win ball games and help people just continue to develop in their careers. So just the overall totality of the job is probably the biggest learning that I had, and how every day you have to approach it the exact same. You know that going into it, but until you actually go through 162 games plus playoffs, it's going to be something that I lean on for the rest of my career.
It was beyond my wildest dreams what he did this year. All expectations, I think he was absolutely surpassing all of them.
Wonderful season.
We'll get to how much that really matters.
Well,
Coach of the Year, a Manager of the Year.
There is a comparison that needs to be made, and that will probably come up at around 7:20.
Finally, Ohio State is your 5 seed. They would host a first-round game against BYU. Bring it. Notre Dame would host Alabama. Penn State would host Georgia. Indiana would host Ole Miss if the season ended today with Boise, Oregon, Miami, and Texas getting the byes.
If you host BYU, do they bring the Cougar?
Yeah,
not a real Cougar. I mean the mascot that
was a bunch of them. Rocky River
jumps out of
why
planes.
Not?
Jumps out of planes. There's Cougars in Rocky River.
Oh yeah, they're all over the place.
Whether or not you're disappointed or optimistic because of how the game went against the Cavs or against the Celtics, I should say. That was Kevin Stefanski yesterday. Asked about his job security, if he feels that he's on the hot seat. Is he worried if he's on the hot seat? He grew up in Philadelphia. They put everybody on the hot seat, said he's not worried about it. Albert Breer of Monday Morning Quarterback was on Afternoon Drive yesterday. He was asked about the job security, and seems that he is pretty convinced we're going to run this thing back next year.
Yeah, based on the job they did over their first 4 years, it's hard for me to look at it and not say they might all just get like a one-year mulligan. And there might be a lot of people under pressure in 2025 as a result. But, you know, again, like I just think the Haslams really like the model that they have, you know, and rightfully so. Like I think that organization is, I mean, maybe, I don't know, you guys are closer to it than me. Like, this is probably the most stable the Browns have been, you know, in the new Browns era, right? Do you really, if you're the owner and you've been seeking that sort of stability for this much time, is this the time to flip over the apple cart? I mean, everybody's got blood on their hands from the Deshaun Watson thing. Right? Like, you know, so I think you bring back the same group, and then it's like your number one thing now becomes, how do we manage this going forward?
A couple things here. I'm not willing to go that far because there's still 7 games left to go in the season. And because there's 7 games left to go in the season, including one tomorrow where your stadium will be full of Steeler fans, the weather's going to be terrible. The tickets are going for what Owen said yesterday, 34 out the door with fees and everything.
No, it was like 60 without the, well, with no, the right now I'm getting 56 on my
56 head. Out the door without
that's
fees.
That's with fees.
What did you have yesterday? Didn't you have something like that in that number?
In the 40s.
Yeah, okay, in the 40s. With the fees?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
All right, so you guys got 2 separate websites. You guys got 2 separate things to go to with those prices. You're going to have a lot of Steeler fans in there. I'm not going to sit here and say that these guys are safe and then go out there and watch them lose against the Pittsburgh Steelers tomorrow and then come in Friday and change my opinion in 48 hours. I cannot say without a shadow of a doubt they're safe. Plus, you know, when Albert talks about stability, just because you haven't fired anybody doesn't mean it's stable. Would you consider the Browns situation right now a stable situation? Their cap says no. The fan reaction anytime the quarterback who you paid $230 million says no. The fan reaction to any player on defense when they dance says no.
All right, I'll put it
The draft picks say no. So
yeah,
what's stable other than you haven't fired anybody?
Yeah, okay. So I understand that point. I would say there's not, it's crazy to think about considering how bad they've been. There's not anywhere near the level of dysfunction that there had been around a bunch of Browns teams.
Not a high bar.
Right, but we know what dysfunction looks like. These guys are not operating out of dysfunction. You're not seeing guys crawl over each other to get leaks out every day. That used to happen a ton.
Well,
that happened with all the front offices. That, I mean, going back, Phil Savage, he was in the news yesterday.
Yeah, he was.
There was dysfunction.
Congratulations
there.
On your new job.
Yeah, what is he, interim GM with the Jets?
Yeah. And he was, by the way, he was the consultant to Joe Douglas. Hello. Who's on the sidelines again on Sunday?
Vrabel.
Okay.
But not a headset, with an earpiece.
He had an earpiece.
Someone's got to explain.
He had the IFB in.
Yeah, someone's got to explain the big difference there. Oh, he doesn't have a microphone? I think people can hear Mike Vrabel if he starts talking.
That's what would void the contract with the Titans. If he had an actual mic to talk
into, that
might be a problem.
But so that's what I mean. Like, yes, the Browns have been stable, and there is their setup, their hierarchy, which is now going to be under the microscope, obviously. They have not really skirted that. They haven't really altered that. They did, according to what I was told, they did do something that I thought to me wasn't a great setup, which was they had Kevin hire a different offensive coordinator, and he did not have the power. He did not have the power that I think a lot of head coaches in his space would have had, which is, hey, I've been to the playoffs twice with the Cleveland Browns, okay? I've won Coach of the Year with the Cleveland Browns. And people got to remember that, what people think about your football team and your operation. And they have definitely distanced themselves from the same old Browns, which the Browns are the laughing stock. They're not the laughing stock anymore. They have a professional setup. They do. I had those grievances with, I think if Kevin wants to do what he wants to do with offensive coordinator, he should be able to do it. And let him bury himself with that. But in this case, when they're telling you to hire somebody, and then you have to do it and go along with it.
And that's why
I don't love that.
Like, if you're Jimmy Haslam, you're sitting there going, well, why do we do this and we're getting these results? See, when you say, like, in their world, that's functional. Boy, I'd really hate to see what dysfunctional is, because you're 2-8. And not a lot of people like you who are Browns fans. There's people who believe they are Browns fans, who say they are Browns fans. They're not real big fans of you right now in the way that this thing is going. And I find it tough for me to say that in 2022, I remember I was on Will Brinson's podcast when they were doing the pick six. And Will asked me point blank, goes, does Kevin Stefanski get fired after this year? And I said, no. And this was earlier, and this was about the same time we had. And he goes, really? He was surprised. And I go, yeah, because I considered 2022 the mulligan. Like, you can take a mulligan in a round, and if you take another, well, then you're just me without a play, and you're just me playing golf. If we're going to make golf analogies here with mulligans, then you're just me. They're not supposed to be me. They're supposed to have a plan. And if this is plan, this is not a good plan. You cannot tell me this is stable. It's not stable. And the implication that guy, when you're asking questions about whether or not the quarterback is good, like when you're asking the players whether or not they think the quarterback has any confidence in himself and is good, it's not stable. When we're talking about trading guys who are supposed to be cornerstones, that's not stable. When the coach is answering questions in press conferences before a Thursday game, whether or not he thinks his job's on the line, that is unstable. So,
well, now they haven't.
I don't believe any of it, and I'm not going
to
say any.
Those are questions, but they haven't traded a cornerstone yet, have they?
I said we're talking about trading cornerstones. Yeah, I mean, it's been thrown in our face to trade Myles Garrett all the time.
Yeah, that's because you're a 2-win football team. Like that has more to do with that. I don't think that's dysfunction. I think it's just because you're not winning football games. I'm trying to be as fair as I can.
I'm being as fair as I can. I'm not trying to be petty. I'm trying to be fair. I swear, of anybody who's trying to be fair, you know I try to be fair to them.
Yeah.
You
would talk about trading on any team that has their cap situation and has high price vets. Yeah. You'd be talking about trading.
And that is, again, but the definition of instability.
But I don't know. I mean, I guess I disagree, because this isn't... Yes, guys might get fired at the end of the year. Like, right now, I'd probably bet on that. But as where they are right now, listening to Albert Breer, like, I understand what Breer was talking about. They have their setup. They have not really skirted that. They haven't really changed. We've seen Haslam change mid-season before, the way that they run the operation. They haven't done that here. He has left it up to their normal protocol to do all the stuff that they do.
They left themselves no outs with a quarterback who had that time and not played in over a year. That's not deviating from where they wanted to go.
Do I
need to check the guardrails that were leaked again? Or does it say to pay a quarterback who hasn't played in over a calendar year, give him $230 million guaranteed, where he has to go through legal loopholes?
I don't think you can rewrite history here. There were double-digit teams that went after Deshaun Watson.
I know that.
He was considered at that time. There would have been more teams that went after him. They couldn't, because they didn't have the money to do it.
I know that, yes.
So are we now just going back and saying, okay, now we know it was a terrible deal. We know that. But yeah. Do you think it was a bad process that led them to that? Because that was a once-in-a-lifetime. When are quarterbacks that are considered that good around the league available in the free agent market?
Not free agent market. He wasn't a free agent. But he had to be traded for.
But he was. That you could go and get him like a free agent.
The three latest examples I could find. One was a real free agent in Tom Brady. Worked out pretty good for Tampa Bay.
He was considered way past his prime at that point. Now he ended up winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he still ended up playing really well.
I'm
trying to be fair when I even say that.
Watson was considered in his prime.
The other two are Deshaun Watson and Aaron Rodgers. And it's not going really well right now in New York. So with everything that they've said, yes, I know I have to get out here, Mitch. The next thing that they needed to do, if it goes by the guardrails, that flies in the face of the guardrails, is to make that deal. So again, I'd leave it to the callers.
Upgrade quarterback?
If you want to believe that this is stable, you ask the callers. I imagine they're not going to agree with you on that. That this is a stable situation.
Because it didn't work out. But any of the 12 teams that would have gotten Deshaun Watson, they'd all be in the same, no matter how good their front office is, they'd all be in the exact same situation, right?
I do have a counterpoint to this.
Would they not be?
I do have a counterpoint to this, because
would they not be?
If we're talking about revisionist history here, I think you're revising something.
Be?
Okay, yeah, fine.
You won't answer the question.
Well, I wasn't thinking, because now I got to get out. But I'll tell you this. I think you're revising your own history here, and I'll tell you why when we come back.